My name is James Graylian, and you are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM, the best kind of radio.
WGXC welcomes audio responses and feedback from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-622-2598 and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. That number again is 518-622-2598.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información, bienvenidos a todos a venir. Llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456. Mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Celeste of New York, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You, too, can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
I'm trying to get the people to say
frequency.
Yeah.
Let's go. Lighting lights in the sky.
You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM Acra Catskill Radio for Open Ears, and my name is Mayuko. This program is Frequency, Meet Bird People in the Hudson Valley. Frequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a freeform mix of sounds made by birds and humans inspired by birds. And humans inspired by birds of this month, we started today's show with two tracks by those humans. A track we just heard was titled Pelican, and at the top of the set, Pigeons. Both tracks are by Stimming, an artist based in Hamburg, Germany, from their 2021 release titled Ludwig. And I wanted to play pigeon-related music because that's the favorite bird of my guest today. I'm rebroadcasting my interview with Leslie Doyle, the president of the Rolif Jensen Historical Society. Their 2025 summer exhibition, Sites to Celebrate, Local History Revisited, is happening right now through October, and the interview I did with Leslie in 2023 touches some topics that are related to this event, in addition to, of course, many bird-related, wildlife-related stories. So I thought this would be a great time to rebroadcast it. Leslie's kind and loving observations of wildlife in her backyards remind us to appreciate the here and now. The here and now is also the culmination of people's lives before us. Leslie shares how the New Deal era environmental improvement program restored the trees we see now in Copaic Falls in Columbia County. These trees had been devastated by Copaic Iron Works, which was an iron extraction and production operation that played a crucial role in local development. This interview was recorded on November 20th, 2023, and originally broadcasted here on Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM on the same November in, again, 2023. I hope you'll enjoy the interview. Thanks for listening. This is Frequency on Waveforms WGXC. Okay, so could you briefly, well, introduce yourself and tell us what Rolif Jensen Historical Society is?
Okay, well, my name is Leslie Doyle, and I'm the current president of the Rolif Jensen Historical Society. And the society was formed actually nearly 50 years ago. This coming summer of 2024 will be our 50th anniversary. It was formed by the town historians of five towns, local towns, of Ankrum, Copaic, Hillsdale, Gallatin, and Taconic. And all of these are kind of united by the Rolif Jensen River. That's a major tributary to the Hudson River. It starts in Austerlitz and it goes all the way through Columbia County and empties at Lithgow into the Hudson River. And that's why everything is called Rojan in this area.
Yeah.
The Historical Society's mission probably best describes it, because we are charged with collecting and preserving and sharing local history, which we try to do. And we do this through programming. We do this through, maintaining archives, maintaining an ever-expanding collection, and also through exhibitions. And we have a major exhibition every summer. So we are the repository of local history, and we have oral histories that we share. We have a very active website. And it's been our pleasure to really make everybody feel welcome there, and that their stories count and are important. And we have, major objects, and we have like can openers from a local bar that closed that was important to people. So it's varied, and it's ever growing, ever expanding. And we're lucky enough also to be in a, to have our own home, which not every small town has. So we are in a former church, the Old Copaig Methodist Church, which was built in 1892 and served the community for 63 years, but then in 1955 it was closed. The Methodist congregation was moved to Church Street in Copaig Flats, as they called it, and the church was closed for 28 years and abandoned. So neighbors sort of looked after it and mowed the grass, but the windows were broken, the roof started to leak, and so on. But the local community saved it and rescued it and repurposed it and gave it to the Historical Society. So that is our most significant object that's preserved, is the church building itself. And it's a wonderful place to exhibit and to have our programming.
Mm-hmm. I also really like that you have small things like can opener you mentioned.
Yes, indeed.
Because usually when people talk about history, it's often about, it's usually the winner's side of the story.
Right.
People who are accomplished something big.
Right.
But local history...
And we have that too.
Right.
But we have the small
also,
things.
Yes. Right, telling the story of...
And we're here to tell the story, yes, indeed.
More ordinary people who lived here and who are around us. And I saw some similarity with that and the birding, because mm-hmm. when I started more paying more attention to birds, I came to realize that it's not just about knowing birds, mm-hmm. but to know what's surrounding them. And, you know, you really have to understand the environment and the history around birds,
yes.
in order to understand bird itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came to sort of appreciate that. And we chatted a little bit about it when mm-hmm. we met. And
yes.
you mentioned also you're literally a birder. I mean, you love birds.
I do.
And we're sitting here mm-hmm. right by a bunch of birds in your own backyard. Something just came. Oh, it's a titmouse. But so I wanted to ask mm-hmm. you also about mm-hmm. your personal relationship with birds. You had a, you know, family episodes and, you know, just how you, you know, have a...
Well, my parents were very invested in birds as well. And we had, I grew up in a townhouse in Manhattan in the Chelsea neighborhood that was, had a huge backyard, you know, larger than the usual. And it had been... when my folks first moved there, a lot of the buildings on our block, and this was in the very early 1950s, had been transformed into rooming houses, and it was a rundown waterfront neighborhood, and people started buying up these old buildings and renovating them and repurposing them and living in them. And we were lucky enough to have a woman from Tasmania, of all places,
oh.
who bought the house and did lots of wonderful work on it, and she was very tiny, and she was a horticulturist, and she became part of the... She was the head of the Horticultural Society in New York City for a time, and she transformed what was basically just a muddy backyard, and in those days, people hung their laundry out, so there were lots of laundry lines and laundry hanging, and she transformed this with flagstones. She made a deal with the police department to get manure from the Morgans, the horses, from the horse detail. There was a fish market around the corner, and she made a deal with those people to get the fish heads and enrich the soil, and it transformed it into this really magnificent garden. And my parents were, and when she finally decided to move back to, she moved to Perth, Australia, and she was a big bird fan also. She said to my parents, I would like to offer you first option to buy, because I think you'll love it and you'll take care of the garden. Mm-hmm. And of course, along with this beautiful garden, were birds. So we always had feeders, and I didn't really know as a kid, you know, I knew, I appreciated it and so on, but I just didn't know the names of the birds. I knew a blue jay, I knew pigeons and so on, but they really sort of cultivated that. And eventually I understood what they saw in it and why they enjoyed it. If you'll look up here, if I can make this reference.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a Subway poster that my daughter gave me for my birthday, and it's got pigeons on it, and she knows how. So we've, the rock dove.
Mm-hmm.
So they're much derided as vermin, but I have always been very fond of pigeons. Anyway, when in adulthood, we had befriended two pigeons. One was named George, and he was flightless. And in front of the townhouse was an areaway with a gate and all the houses down the block, which is very typical in New York City. And he remained in the gated area, and he would come when you called his name.
So he knows his name.
He knew his name. He knew. And he would sometimes go out the gate. And we would sort of be, when I picked up my daughter from school, we'd sort of hang out in front. George would come out and visit with us. And if he'd start to go out, we'd say, George, come back. Anyway, so he lived with us for a couple of years and passed. Aww. But he had a, you know, he had a great time.
You named him George. Why?
My father named him George. I don't know why. He just thought he looked like a George. And then I had a very special relationship with a pigeon that we called Specky. And she was mostly white and with speckles. And I loved this pigeon. And she had, unfortunately, around her leg, she had gotten a string. And I could never get close enough to get it off of her, so she must have just gotten used to it. Mm. But when I would come home from work and be walking from 9th Avenue down, I would see her up in the, across the street on one of the windowsills, and I would make a special call to her, and she'd come swooping down, and I would feed her. Mm. And this went on for a couple of years, and one day she didn't come back, but... So Specky, so everybody remembers Specky very well.
So neither are your pets. They're like more
they were
like
the
residents.
Outside. They were the outside birds. So and then we had the blue jays and the other birds and the and lots of sparrows, of course, mm-hmm. which is a very urban bird. But those were two special bird relationships that we had in the city. And then when we moved up here, there was a tree, if I can once again reference where we had this arbor where we hang the bird feeders, mm-hmm. there was a single tree there, and the previous owners had placed a feeder on branches that extended, so it was very symmetrical. So we just fell in love with the birds, and we would only come up on weekends, and the first thing that we would do is, of course, take the dog out and the cats if we had them, and then we'd rush out and fill the feeders right away. And anyway, so we just became avid bird fanciers and started to learn all their names, and friends have given us all the famous Sibley books and Peterson mm-hmm. on birds, and it's just become a part of our life. And the first thing that you do in the morning, you make the coffee, and then you go out and feed the birds in all kinds of weather. Mm. And then, of course, getting to know them through the seasons is incredible.
Well, one thing I thought interesting that you told me about before was that, you know, a lot of people who feed birds, they sometimes like have some kind of hostility towards certain species. Like some people don't want squirrels come at their feeder. Some people don't want, even like blue jays are sometimes, you know, despised.
They can be very aggressive, yeah.
Right, but you mentioned that you basically feed everybody who comes to your garden to the point where they don't even bother your vegetable garden flowers,
no,
garden,
they don't.
Which is for human.
Right,
so
exactly.
You have gardens for human.
Yeah, that's in the front.
That's in the front.
And the back is all theirs, and it's about an acre. Mm-hmm. And it, so we have woods surrounding the property, and that's where the deer will pop out.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you get rabbits, and you get some other little things too, and they all have their own share.
Yes.
In your garden, so that they don't bother your human garden.
They leave the garden. Yeah, they leave it alone. So we have daylilies out here, which sometimes the deer eat and sometimes they don't, but they're welcome to it. Mm. And then the little beds, or the large beds in the back, we have bee balm and things that are very bird friendly. And of course, the hummingbirds have been, you know, I never knew that the hummingbirds would come this close to the house, but we just have such a, it's, they're so magical. So that's been a wonderful addition. And as I mentioned to you, so one of the great pleasures of looking out of these windows is we read about the animals and the birds, but then to see the behavior is very, very exciting. Mm-hmm. And you read about the groundhog, which is also called the woodchuck, and it's also called a whistle pig. One afternoon, as I was looking out, I heard this. And right in the straight back there, there's a burrow. I know where all their burrows are. And he was sitting up and whistling. And I said, oh my God, they really do whistle.
That's so cute. Was it your father who you told me about
oh, yes.
the woodchuck hunt?
Yes. So my parents were from a very small town in rural Indiana called Winchester. And he grew up hunting. And one day he was courting my mother. And so they were both from the same town. And my mother lived on a farm, a very huge and historical farm. It was very historic. It had been there for a long time. It had beautiful outbuildings and a beautiful house. And my Uncle Lloyd, her brother, ran it. And one day my father said, well, let's, and he really, more than hunting, he wanted to just spend time with my mother. And so they said, we're going to go out into the woods if that's okay with you, Lloyd, because he could be a little nutty. And so Lloyd said, all these groundhogs, if you see any, please shoot them, because they're driving me crazy and they're digging up my crops. So they walked into the woods and they came upon a tree that had a sort of a V in it with the trunks. And there was a groundhog stuck. It couldn't get out. And that's another thing about them that I was very surprised at. They're very good climbers, because we've seen them climb the trees in the back to get the pears. Anyway, so instead of shooting it, they spent the entire day getting him down. And it must have been, because they can be very ferocious. So they probably had to prod and do this and that, and they freed him. And that's really when he said, I'd really much rather help animals than to hunt them. So that was one of my favorite stories.
Yeah, I really loved parents. It when you yeah. told me that yeah. story.
So, too. It changed his whole life. And another animal story I thought of was the time when I saw the possum play possum. And one day I was doing something out in the back, and I noticed that around this old gnarled tree, there were many turkey vultures. And I thought, what's going on? So I walked over, and they're pretty ferocious looking, and they're very
yeah,
big. So I said, what's going on? What's up? And so they sort of started to fly away, and that's when I looked over the hedge, and there was a possum lying there. And I thought, oh, my God, they've come to... And before I knew it, after they left, I saw the possum's nostrils flare, and he sort of came to, and it was as though he looked at me and he said, thanks. Waddled off. It was incredible.
Yeah, it's really so funny. Yeah, we do have a bunch of turkey vulture around here in Copenhagen.
And they serve a purpose. They, they keep the roads clear of roadkill.
If you're just tuned in, my guest today is Leslie Doyle, the president of the Rolif Jansen Historical Society in Copec Falls, Columbia County. This is a rebroadcast of my interview with Leslie in 2023. Thank you for listening. This is Frequency on Waveforms, WGXC 90.7 FM.
May I tell one more story that's
yeah,
related
course.
To birds and
yes.
animals? This must be about 6 years ago. We have right across from the auction house, the little pond, which is a water source, and we've actually seen the fire truck filling up there, which is an amazing thing to see. But the pond itself is called Folger's Pond. Mm-hmm. And one afternoon in August, I believe it was very hot. It was about 97 degrees. And we get a call from our neighbor. And she says, I just want to let you know that there's a bear taking a dip in Folger's Pond.
Uh-huh.
And we have incredible photographs of this. And he had come down from Tom's Hill, and he was hot, so he was taking a little dip.
Uh-huh.
And so she said, I just want to let you know, in case you're going to go out with the dog or whatever, and to take in your feeders. And, of course, some places are very strict about in the spring you take your feeders in because the bears are waking up.
Right.
And they want the quick protein. Anyway, so we ran out and we got the feeders and took them in. And before I could get the last feeder in, which was given to me by a very dear friend and fellow bird lover, my good friend Alice Blom, she had given me a vintage thistle feeder that was the only thing left out there. And before I could go back, I went, oh, my God. And that's when we still had the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the bear hugging the tree and reaching up for this thistle feeder.
Oh, no.
And I thought, oh, no. So I tapped on the glass, and he looked up, and I said, please. He said, and it was really as though he said, okay, there's not much in there anyway. He got down, and he sauntered away. And I have it still. So, anyway.
So all these forests around here, all these trees around here, they're all planted not so long time ago. And
that's true.
You know, I learned from Dave Decker, who's the land steward of the Rainstrom Hill Audubon Sanctuary, which is in Hillsdale, so not too far away from here. That's the first time I learned that forest there also is all man-made. It's been planted by Mr. Rainstrom.
Right.
And before that, it had been a farmland. And when I talked to you, I learned from you that here in Kopek Falls, there's a similar history that these trees, the Taconic State Park and all that, they're not that old.
No.
And, you know, that such change of the natural environment directly affects the birds, you know, habitats and populations. So I was really curious about it when I heard from it. So maybe you can tell us, you know, what basically happened here.
Sure. Kopek Ironworks, as it was called until the early 20th century, attracted the Pomeroys because they discovered that there was iron ore very close by. And so there were all the right ingredients to have a furnace, as it were. And so they had the water from the Bashbish, water power. They had the woods all around the whole area, because you need wood to make charcoal, which burns much hotter than wood itself. And it had the iron ore, and then eventually the railroad. So they opened in 1845. The railroad started to come up here, and it's incredible to me how early it was. It was in 1852, so the Harlem Line started coming right into what they called Kopek Ironworks, and it's which is now the rail trail. And so all of these ingredients were there, but the trees were, if you look at old photographs of Kopek Falls, that whole area was denuded, literally. They chopped down all the trees. And colliers would be up in the woods making charcoal, and a lot of them came from France, apparently, where they had expertise. But the whole area was devastated in terms of its environment. It's an interesting question, because the bird population probably really dwindled. And eventually they learned, and I guess environmentalism was a, you know, a thing of the future, but they discovered that the ground was, they needed the trees to keep the land from eroding. So they started to have flooding, and it became, you know, a very bad situation. And they also ran out of iron ore. So at that time, in about 1903, they closed the ironworks. And happily for us, two families, including the Masters, who are still here, Edgar Masters is still very, very involved with the ironworks, and his grandparents had a huge amount of acreage, which they donated to become parkland. So that is one of the bases of Taconic State Park. And the ore bed, where this ore was mined for many, many years, has become a wonderful swimming place, which is called the ore bed still. And slowly but surely, things started to come back. And then it was starting in 1933, you asked me about the Civilian Conservation Corps, which is one of the FDR's, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President Roosevelt's, he lived not far from here in Hyde Park, and he was very invested in parkland and conservation. And so the Civilian Conservation Corps was organized, and it was a way, during the Depression, of employing people. And it was young men, apparently, who from the ages of 15 to 25 or so. And it went from 1933 to 42. And they planted thousands and thousands and thousands of trees. And that's where you get the new growth from. So it was really, another wonderful part of the New Deal. And we have all benefited from it, and including the birds and the wildlife. So become very well populated again. And there was a lesson to be learned. And I think that at that time, people were beginning to realize that you had to, the Dust Bowl in the Midwest, you had to rotate the crops. Otherwise, you would just, you know, you couldn't grow. The soil was not rich enough to grow anything. And if you had the misfortune of drought, you had everything just blew away.
Right.
So people were learning these lessons, and that was a very good part of it, and we've all benefited, all of us, from it.
Mm-hmm. So. It's kind of incredible because mm-hmm. it's only lasted about 60 years. I mean, Iron Works
yes.
itself
yeah.
had such large impact in the environment. I mean, we can ruin things in such short
yes.
period of time.
Such a short period of time. So, and I guess when they first came here, it was just, you know, the untold, I mean, what people must have thought when they came to this country mm-hmm. for the first time and just saw nothing but woodland. Mm-hmm. And of course, then that it had to be cleared for agriculture.
Right.
It had to be tamed, roads had to be built, but certainly an example of the economic engine. I mean, it employed many people. And it also, the ironworks also brought people here.
Right.
So that was where the population really increased. And people of all kinds and all backgrounds came. Mm-hmm. And they hopped on the railroad. And I think I mentioned that, you know, when the Irish during the potato famine came to New York City, they were not welcome. Mm-hmm. And there were signs saying Irish need not apply. So Lemuel Pomeroy, the first owner of the ironworks, said, hop on the train and come on up and I'll hire you. And mm-hmm. that was really remarkable. So,
but it's also a little mm-hmm. hopeful story too, because mm-hmm. when we see the landscape here, it's so rich in terms of nature now.
It is.
And the Civilian Conservation Corps, they only were active for like 10 years, 1930s
yeah,
to 40s.
And then I guess what really happened, well, the thing about 1942, it was, you know, everybody went to war in Europe and in the Pacific, you know, the many theaters of the war. But
right.
So, and in a funny way, it was preparing people for that in the sense that they worked in unison and they had all these, you know, they learned all of this, these techniques of environmental conservation and so on. So,
okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
I weep like a willow, more like a dove. I weep like a willow, more like a dove. I weep like a willow, more like a dove. Said life ain't worth living if you ain't with the one you love. If I had wings like not a turtle dove. If I had wings like not a turtle dove. If I had wings like not a turtle dove. I would rise and fly, light on the one I love. It's a low-down farm, I'm mistreating engineer. It's a low-down farmer, mistreating engineer. It's a low-down farmer, mistreating engineer. Took my gal away and they left me standing here. I was standing at the station waiting for my train. Standing at the station waiting for my train. Standing at the station waiting for my train. And the tears ran down like we dropped the rain. Mr. Engineer, turn your engine round. Mr. Engineer, turn your engine round. Mr. Engineer, turn your engine round. For the woman I love, she done blow the town. Gonna leave a walking, talking to myself. Only a walking, talking to myself. Only a walking, talking to myself. And one a lurching her somebody else.
That was a song titled Turtle Dove Blues by Peg Leg Howell from Complete Recorded Works in Chronological Order, Volume 2, 1928 to 1930. Thanks again to Leslie Doyle for the wonderful interview. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, the Rolif Jansen Historical Society has its 2025 summer exhibition, Sites to Celebrate Local History Revisited, happening right now. And they have a series of historic site visits that you can join, which is happening again around Copaic Falls in Columbia County. And if you're interested, the information can be found at their website, RolifJansenNHS.org. RolifJansenNHS. That's one word, .org. And I'll be posting a transcript of this interview that also includes the relevant links and photos to the BeQuincy's website, which is at bequincy.substack.com. Again, it's at the Substack, bequincy.substack.com. And that's where I also post monthly birdwalk list in and around the Hudson Valley. And the summer is not the greatest season for the bird clubs to host bird walks because the trees are so dense. You know, it's very, very hard to find and see birds because they're kind of hiding higher up in the tree among the leaves. And they're not singing that much anymore in the late summer because the breeding season is over. But they're coming back soon because of the fall migration season, and so are the bird walks. In Columbia County, Saturday, August 30th at 8 a.m., Hen Hollow Conservation Area. This one is organized by the Allen DeVoe Bird Club and Hudson Mohawk Bird Club. Sooner than that bird walk, happening sooner, which is on August 27th, Wednesday, at Hopeland Sanctuary, north of Mills Mansion, Sartsburg, in Dutchess County. Wednesday, August 27th at 7:30 a.m., organized by Waterman Bird Club. John Barrow's Natural History Society of Ulster County has a walk on Sunday, August 31st, at 8:30 a.m., but the club is in Ulster County, but this walk is happening in Dutchess County, which is at Grieg Farm in Red Hook. Hoffman Bird Club in Berkshire County in Massachusetts has been organizing Common Nighthawk Watch in Pittsfield and Williamstown. And this event has already been happening and runs through August 31st, happening every evening at 7:30 p.m. It sounds like a series of evening picnics almost. You know, watching common nighthawks. It says here that leaders record all nighthawks, other birds, and other natural history observations, such as monarchs, other insects, flowers, etc., for 15 nights, sending a final report to eBird and to Hoffman Bird Club. So that's 15 evenings of birding. You can find more details on, again, BeQuincy's Substack, where I posted this list of bird walk. Again, it is at bequincy.substack.com. And the bird walk list is linked to all the bird clubs' websites, so you can find more details, more information there. And if you're interested in joining them to become a member of those clubs, you can find, again, more information that's linked from there. So I hope you check it out. Let's hear another pigeon-related song, since pigeon is one of Leslie's favorite birds. We're gonna hear Hato, which means pigeons or dove in Japanese, by a Japanese group called Mahel Shalal Hash Bass. And I'm gonna play this off of live recorded at Shinjuku Jam 2006. Thanks for listening. This is Frequency on Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. We just heard a track titled Birds and Sun and Clay by August Bourne, which is a collaboration between Six Organs of Admittance's Ben Chesney and Hiroyuki Usui from the band Fushitsha. And ahead of that was Hato, meaning dove or pigeon, by a Japanese band, Mahel Shalal Hashbaz. And that's it for my show today. You've been listening to Waveforms WGXC, Acre Catskill, 90.7 FM, Radio for Open Ears. Coming up next is from the Radio Art Archive, Magneto Mori, Vienna, a piece from 2019 by Mark Vernon. This program is produced by Waveform Radio. It says here, Magneto Mori, Vienna, was produced by Scottish radio artist Mark Vernon. Mark Vernon has been creating a series of radio pieces, including this one, out of semi-degraded audio tape. Using a portable reel-to-reel tape recorder, he records sounds from a place, in this case Vienna, Austria. Then he cuts up the tape and in Vienna buried it in a muddy garden with local souvenir fridge magnets to further erase parts of the tape. After a few days, he exhumed the tape and spliced it back together in random order. Meanwhile, Mark Vernon went to Viennese flea markets, collecting cassettes and dictaphones and the like. Out of all this material, he created a portrait of Vienna in both place and time, an archaeological excavation of found sounds, lost fragments, buried memories, and magnetic traces. That sounds like some kind of fermented food to my ears, but I guess you can find out if you stay, and I hope you will, stay tuned here on WGXC 90.7 FM. And I actually still have a few minutes left, so I'll play one last song by another Japanese artist titled Tori no Koe, meaning like sound of birds, songs, birds, songs, something like that. A Japanese band called Hadaka no Rallies. They somehow in the West go by this some weird name, the French or whatever, Le Rallies de Nudes. I only know them as Hadaka no Rallies because I'm from Japan. But that's what we're going to hear to finish, close this show today. This is a track from Studio and Soundboard 73 to 77. 1973 to 1977, that is. And that'll be really the end of today's show. This program has been Bequency, Meet Bird People in Hudson Valley, and I have been Mayuko. I'm here every fourth Saturday of the month at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, so I'll be back on September 27th with more music by people inspired by birds and maybe bird field recordings and another, hopefully, great interview. And I hope you join me again. Thanks again for listening, and have a great rest of your weekend and happy fall migration season. See you next time.
Jesus.